Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. And remember, what's happening in Vegas is not staying in Vegas, as I bring you helpful tips in all sorts of topic areas with a Vegas twist, of course. So let's get the show started. Welcome everybody. It's good to have you in for another episode. I've got a great surprise for you today on the show. But before I get to that, I just want to check in. I hope everybody's doing well. If you're new to the podcast, please check out my Facebook group page, the Vegas Therapist Podcast, Ryan Winder group page for updates, topics, feedback, different things like that. You can go on there and just communicate with the community there. I love hearing your feedback and the comments on the different things that I post. So you're more than welcome to be a part of that. The more, the merrier. Also, if you've hadn't had a chance to rate and review the show on Apple, please do so. It's a great way for the show to get more listeners and more exposure for the different things that we're talking about. All right. So for today's show, I'm going to give you a chance to hear the presentation I gave at the Hope and Healing Workshop this last weekend. There's a lot of overlap from last week's episode on radical honesty, so I kind of go into that topic and the benefits there. This will include more examples from clients and different things like that, but also the added bonus is when I talk about how radical honesty helps us move through our shame and the benefits there. So I think you'll really take a lot out of that. So even if you end up fast forwarding to that part, that's fine. If you've already heard the radical honesty part, but also, like I said, during the radical honesty and the benefits there, I do add in some more examples with client situations and stuff like that and how that plays out in real life. So I think you'll enjoy that. Where it kind of picks up, I'm just sort of introducing myself, talking a little bit about my wife. She was able to be in person for that event and be there to support me. So that's kind of where it picks up. And then it does kind of cut off towards the end, just when I'm closing up and I start rattling my papers a little bit. So I cut it off, but you don't really miss anything. It's just me finishing up as I'm talking. So anyway, hope you'll enjoy this edition of the Radical Honesty, the benefits and how it improves intimacy and reduces shame. You like what I have to say. She definitely had a lot of influence in us moving here, so you can thank her for that. If you don't like what I have to say, you can blame her for influencing us in moving here. So, I started out in Las Vegas with my practice and was there for nearly 20 years, including school and doing my private work. And then we had a shift and moved here about just over a year ago now. And like I said, I've been working out of an office in Meridian and enjoying our time here. I think one of the things, and I'm not just saying this today, I've said this to several other people in the last 6 months or so when they ask us how we like it here. And one of the things I really do enjoy here is the clients I work with. I just feel a different energy with them. Their desire to heal and get better is just, it's just different. And so I've appreciated working with people as they go on their journey to whatever challenges that they're facing. It's a blessing that I get to be a part of that and that they trust me with that journey. But I definitely have really enjoyed that. So for me, how this got started or how this process got started as far as my work in addictions and in particular with pornography and sex was as my first 2 years out of grad school, I worked in an agency where we did a lot of substance use work and just other things. And then when I shifted over to private practice, I took on like a part-time situation with family services and I worked there a couple days a week. And I remember probably my first 2 weeks there, I had a couple come in, nice couple, affluent in the community, husband was a former bishop. They sit down, they have a conversation, we're talking about, and I'm trying to think in like, what they would need my help for. And, you know, everything kind of seemed fairly normal as we're talking about different things. And then we get to the question of what brings you here or what can I help you with? And the husband took over at that point and described to me what at the time was his addiction to pornography and his struggles with that and the history that he'd had with that. And it was kind of like off-putting to me in the sense that I didn't really know what to even think because I hadn't really thought about that being an issue, I guess, in that situation at the time. This was like early 2005. And so I just kind of got through that session and tried to get some information as to what was going on there. And then I remember distinctly afterwards, I had some time just to think about it. And I just thought, this is something you need to learn. This is something you need to understand. This is something that's going to be a bigger issue in the future. And you need to prepare yourself for working with individuals who have this struggle. And so from that time forward, really, I just kind of took it upon myself to read books and delve in and try to, you know, look for ways to help people. A lot of the books I read early on were, you know, a lot of them talked about shame and the components with shame in there. And so that was a big part of what I tried to help people through early on in recovery. And then obviously as I got more educated, and then I was able to help develop other strategies and tools to help them through their addiction. And that's kind of been the process for me as far as doing that kind of work. And like I said, 18, 19 years later, it's still a part of my practice and it's something that I enjoy doing. So as far as my topic for today, you can see how radical honesty creates connection and breaks down shame. And especially when it comes to addiction, those things are vitally important. So that's what I want to speak to you about. And I hope that, you know, through that process, you'll be able to gain some better understanding of the importance of honesty and the importance of the role that it plays, not only in recovery, but in really building a strong relationship with your spouse or your partner or with anybody else in your life. So what is radical honesty? Well, radical honesty, in a sense, is the practice of telling the truth, really. But it's telling the truth about things both large and small, and especially when doing so exposes our weaknesses, our mistakes, and ultimately even entails sometimes us having consequences at the end of that. That's sometimes what, you know, can definitely be a challenge for us when it talks about honesty, is if there's consequences at the end, and maybe we want to try to avoid those consequences. So truth telling can be very painful. As much as important as it is, it can be a very painful thing. But honesty has a way of establishing this soul-sustaining circuitry that connects us to those around us. And it connects us to our highest self. Actions such as keeping our promises, refraining from stealing, cheating, admitting that we've made mistakes, all support longevity and fitness for our spirits. And so, truth telling is very important for our overall well-being. But before I even kind of go more into the benefits of radical honesty, I want to just take a step back and look at the other side, which is what lying and dishonesty can do to us, because that is also something that's problematic. And so the negative impacts of lying really is something that is like a blood clot to our soul's flow. It blocks energy, which then threatens our well-being and throws our life into chaos. And there's a book by Erica Spiegelman called Rewired, and she talks about the consequences of lying in her book. And one of the things that she says, and I just want to read a quote from that book, it says, "There are consequences to every lie. No matter how harmless, these minor fibs contribute to a lack of intimacy, they erode friendships and romantic partnerships. Each lie is like a brick in a fortress of isolation. The more we lie, the more we struggle to risk vulnerability." And I think if you just kind of take a step back in your own life and you look at times maybe where that's in your recovery or early on in your recovery or when you weren't in recovery, when you think about that process and what lying does and how it blocks you off and how it isolates you. I was thinking about this just yesterday. I still see quite a few clients from Las Vegas. via telehealth. And I had a session with a client yesterday, and we were talking about kind of what was going on for him. And he had really gone backwards in his recovery and was in a really deep relapse. Lots of things were happening, drug use, sex things that were happening. And it had gotten pretty significantly bad. And he was finding himself in a very dark place. He didn't really want to even tell me these things, but he was open. And as we talked through the process of him, you know, trying to, you know, that what he needed to do and how he needed to come clean to his partner, and so that he could begin down the path of getting the help that he needed, you could just see that sense of isolation that he felt, and that fortress that he built up through all the lies that had happened around his relapse, but also the struggle that he was having with trying to be vulnerable and the struggle that he was having to try to be more open. And it was interesting because we had a plan, it was all in place, and this is around noon yesterday. Then about 7:15, I get a text. I'm having a problem. I need some words. I need some advice. And so I called him, and basically in that 7 hours, he had talked himself out of coming clean and out of risking the vulnerability and all these reasons why that wasn't why he didn't need to do that. And maybe the relationship just wasn't good for him and all these blaming things. And that just happened in a few short hours that he had reverted all those things that we talked about. Now, luckily to hear, about 30 minutes ago, I got a text from him and saying, I think we're going to try to work it out. I came clean and we're going to need some help along this path as a couple. So he was able to risk that vulnerability and he was able to put those things into practice. But I know that can be a very difficult place for us when all that stuff's kind of caving in on us and we don't feel like we can be open. One last thing about lying is it also can lower our self-esteem. And we think, well, how does it lower our self-esteem? But each time we lie, we end up reinforcing our feelings of inadequacy. And we do this by trying to make ourselves just look and sound a little bit better than we think we are. But the one thing that we have to know and remember is that we can't fool our soul. Our soul knows. We know what we're doing in those situations, and so it ends up working against us. And of course, one of the most powerful things that occurs with lying is how lying is connected to shame. And shame can be a powerful influence in our truth-telling struggle. Shame acts like electricity coursing through our veins, setting off a chain reaction of spontaneous lies. And when we feel things like being embarrassed or inferior or not good enough, shame can cripple our ability to tell the truth, perpetuating the cycle of isolation and disconnection. And I think those familiar with shame know that cycle is very real, and it's very difficult at times to get out of when it persists. And so as we move on to some of the benefits of what radical honesty can bring to us, I want to just refer to a book by Anna Lemke and her book, Dopamine Nation, that recently came out. One thing, she's a practicing clinician, and one of the things she talks about is just how any of her patients in recovery that have achieved long-term sobriety have had to rely on the truth-telling aspect of radical honesty, and that's been one of the keys to their recovery. And so there's three benefits to radical honesty that I want to just go over. The first one is that radical honesty is something that promotes our awareness. And of course, a key feature to any behavior change is one that requires us to recount our experiences in some fashion. This can give us the mastery that we need over that behavior by recounting that or going through that, whether that's to a therapist, talking to a sponsor, confiding in a friend, writing in a journal. The method really doesn't matter. It's just the fact that we're actually doing that and we have a place to promote that awareness and to be truthful with ourselves. And she goes on to say in her book, it's the honest disclosure that brings our behavior into relief, allowing us in some cases to see it for the first time. Sometimes we're not even, like I said, the idea of the awareness is that we see the pattern as we put it down on paper, as maybe we talk to it with a friend. One of the things I thought about as an example of this, especially in the power of writing it down or keeping a journal or having some method in that realm, was
If you're familiar with Dax Shepard, he's an actor. He also has a podcast. He's also a recovering addict, and he talks about his addiction a lot in his podcast. But recently, maybe it was like a year or 2 years ago, he had a relapse. And in that relapse, he did a podcast where he talked about the process of how he got to that relapse. And I thought what was interesting was one of the most important factors that he connected to his relapse was that he stopped writing in his journal. And he stopped being honest with himself, and he stopped seeing the things that he was doing that were leading to that relapse. And of course, as he stopped doing that, the relapse or the actions towards acting out became greater and greater. So, just like again, something simple as keeping a journal and keeping ourselves accountable is an important part of what we can do to keep ourselves in a safe spot. One thing I thought was interesting too is the principle of accounting for our behavior is evident in the 12-step manual. Now, I don't know if I have an updated manual or not, but this is one of the first ARP manuals that I have, but it's under step 5, but it's really referring to step 4. And there's a quote in there that says, writing our inventories was like recording hundreds of separate scenes from our lives. As we did, we began to recognize patterns of weakness that had influenced our choices. We started to understand our tendencies towards negative thoughts and emotions. These thoughts and emotions were truly the exact nature of our wrongs. I think that's such an important quote because, the notion of like writing those inventories and, I know a lot of people have dread around doing step 4, but I think sometimes it's the mindset that we go into step 4 with. And when we go into it with the step 4, it's like not the idea of carrying that shame of us having to account for our behaviors, but it's the idea of us being open to the notion of being able to see those patterns, to see the things that we've done, to see the tendencies towards, different negative thoughts and emotions that get us to those behaviors. That's really what that can bring to us if we have the right mindset. And so I love that principle, and I love the idea of us being able to do that without the shame. The second benefit of radical honesty is that it promotes intimate connection. And that's maybe something, I want to go into a little bit more, but I'm just going to talk about it a little bit briefly more here as far as the idea within our relationships and how that brings us closer together. We know that telling the truth draws people in, especially when we're willing to expose our vulnerabilities. I think we've all probably felt that in group, in our group settings and different things when we share and we feel that connection with others, because even though we fear rejection, we see that the opposite happens when we tell the truth. People come closer to us. They see in our brokenness their own vulnerability and humanity, and they're reassured that they're not alone in their doubts, their fears, and their weaknesses. And so one of the things I wanted to share really quick, and I think this is on the next slide. So this is, hopefully you can see that pretty good. So this cycle comes from a book called How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It, even though talking about it's very important, and that's what we're talking about as far as like being honest. But one of the dynamics in it, it talks about on each side, you have on one side the need for security. And in the book it says that's the primary feeling that women want to have in a relationship, is the feeling of security. And then on the other side, it has shame, and then it says men. And that's the feeling that men don't want to have in a relationship. They don't want to feel shame. They don't want to feel not good enough. They want to feel like a failure or any of those negative kind of feelings that come. And when men feel shame, their tendency is to react in more defensiveness or withdraw, or they do somewhat of both, which then obviously doesn't help on the security side because they're moving away from their spouse and they're not being open. And so the idea of radical honesty is that that the radical honesty really satisfies both parts. When you think about the need for security, how better to feel more secure than when we know that our spouse is being honest with us and that we can trust that, and how that makes you feel in that moment when you just feel that from them. And then on the other side, when we're radically honest with ourselves, how that melts away the shame and how we feel more of a sense of acceptance from our spouse. And so those two things can be combated by us being able to have that in our relationships. And so then on the top and the bottom is like we can either move towards connection with radical honesty, or we can not have that, and that puts us in a place of disconnection. So something really quick, this was more of a thing where we were talking about, me and my wife were out with, we're out at the basketball games last week, and we were talking with some friends, and they were trying to, like, you know, get me to give them some free therapy or something. But anyway, but it was, they kept saying, it was like, you know, if we were paying you right now, but then you keep asking me, but it was, anyway, it was a good time. We were having a good time. But he was talking about a difficult time he was going through. And he was just saying in this place, kind of like from the standpoint of the men, when he was in a place of deep shame, you know, he'd lost his job, they were on the verge of losing their house, and all these difficulties were kind of facing them. And he was just saying how in those moments, he just really wanted to feel some kind of validation or some kind of acknowledgement from his wife. And so we were talking forth about that. And I didn't say this at the time, but like later on, as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, you know, I know, and maybe they're kind of like a little bit, I mean, in some ways they're the same, but I thought, you know, as he was struggling with those feelings of shame, you know, he said that he really, you know, he wanted to feel this sense of validation from his wife. But the way that I really thought about it is really what he wanted was just that sense of reassurance that he was still good enough, that he still had value, that even though these outside things were falling apart, that he could still be that to her. And that's really what he wanted to feel. And I think that that's what, you know, so many of us want to feel when we're stuck maybe in our addiction, that we still have value, that we still have worth, that we're not our addiction. And so I think that's what we can give each other with this sense of radical honesty and connection in our relationships. And so going back to this slide, the importance of that promotion of human connection. Intimacy is also known as it has its own source of dopamine. Oxytocin and dopamine, they work together to enhance bonding between partners. And so we actually get a dose of that from sharing and being open and honest in our relationships. And there's a quick example that Anna shares from her book, Dopamine Nation. She says, and this is kind of referring to a couple that she'd been working with, and the husband had a long history of sex addiction. And she'd worked with him for a long time and was just trying to really get him to be honest in spite of his shame. And so there came a point in his story where she shares the following. She says, after his honest disclosure to his wife, followed by her expression of warmth and empathy. Now that's key, and we're going to talk about that, the importance of the response, right? Because the radical honesty on one end is important, but the response can be equally as important. Jacob experienced a spike in oxytocin and dopamine in his reward pathway, encouraging him to do that again. So you have to have, just like in anything else, we have to, if you feel that sense of positivity towards sharing yourself and being open and being honest, and it's met with a positive response, it's going to create that pathway for us to want to do it again. Now, on the opposite side, again, another example of a client that I was actually working with a lot of, kind of like the principle of radical honesty and for him to be honest in more ways. And for him, the challenge was, so his addiction had kind of shifted in multiple ways. It started out with pornography, and then he kind of moved on to some binge eating kind of behaviors and hiding some eating and stuff like that. And, you know, we were working, like I said, on kind of being more honest. And so what happened was he had gone out of town for business and found himself at a buffet and went to the buffet and binged on at the buffet. And then he called his wife just to let her know, because he wanted to try to practice that, you know, the principle of radical honesty. Now, she wasn't necessarily aware that he was trying to practice that, and this has been a struggle between them. And so the response maybe wasn't as great as it could have been. And so, you know, that's something that we worked on in our next couple session. But because she kind of met it with more of the frustration of him kind of falling backwards, where he was really more focused on just trying to be honest and let her know that he'd had that slip and that he'd done that behavior. And so, like I said, the honesty is critical, but the response is also important. And so that's something that we need to be mindful of as well. And while truth-telling promotes human attachment, compulsion and overconsumption of high dopamine goods counters that and leads to isolation and indifference. The drug then, whatever that drug is, comes to replace the reward obtained from being in a relationship with others. So We don't want to be in that place where we're allowing, you know, the things that we're using to replace that connection that we have in our relationship. And so moving towards, again, radical honesty and being open and developing that connection is critical for our recovery. So the third thing that that is a benefit in this radical honesty is the way that we tell our stories and how that's a marker and predictor of our mental health. And so one of the things, and this kind of came up a little bit in I think Cody's first presentation, I'll get to that in just a sec, but it says when we share stories in which we're frequently the victim and lack accountability, this leads to us remaining unwell. When we're too busy blaming others to get down to the business of our recovery, then it just doesn't work. And I just had the question kind of in that note, you know, how many of us or how many times early on in our recovery or even before we started recovery, did you hear yourself blame as opposed to own? In terms of like how that was going for you, maybe the reason why you acted out or what, you know, and how that was somebody else's fault or somebody else did this or whatever it might be. So, you know, really getting to a place where we can create a truthful autobiography is important to that, into that recovery. And obviously that takes honesty. The one thing I thought of during Cody's presentation was that it also helps us to make the shift as we are truthful with ourselves and do this. It helps us to make the shift from I am to I did, which is a part of letting go of the shame. And one of the things that he talked about was these narratives that we create, you know, so it's like I'm a depressed person or this is something that you're never going to be over. And so that type of narrative in your life, you know, can weigh you down and do the same things as like kind of our addiction, where it's like, if you feel this is who I am and this is what I am, there's not a lot of hope in getting out of that. So as we create more of a truthful autobiography with ourselves, where we're talking about things that we did or things that we've done, but not who we are and who we want to be, that's very freeing to not only to ourselves, but to the, you know, to the people around us, but also it's helping to create a narrative where we can see a path out. And so the idea of, again, having that truthful autobiography is critical in that. One of the other things she talks about in her book and underneath this is just the notion of like getting away from the false self. I think a lot of times when we're wrapped up in our addiction, you know, we end up developing this false self, which is described as a self-constructed persona that is a defense against intolerable and external demands and stressors, and the creation of the false self can lead to profound feelings of emptiness. So there's not a whole lot going on for us in that false self because there's nothing about it that's real. And there's nothing about it that is genuine or really is something that we can connect to. And of course, I won't necessarily go into it fully, but we know that, you know, social media can play a big role in the creation of that false self, where we can project a certain image of a way of being and doing things that's removed from maybe how we're acting or living. And so ultimately, the antidote to the false self is the authentic self or radical honesty. And the reason is because that will then tether us to our existence and makes us feel real in the world. It also lessens the cognitive load required to maintain all those lies. And that will free up mental energy for us to live more spontaneously and in the moment. So I think that's another way to look at that too, just like the mental load and weight that it carries to take on all those lies is such a burden, but yet, you know, we do it for a long period of time. And so the idea of, again, just being honest and being able to be free of that is such a relief as we go through that process. So now I want to kind of just shift to a little bit of just more of the notion of shame and radical honesty specifically, because shame is such an intricate dynamic and kind of what will take us away from being more open and honest. And so I think the first thing that we need to consider is just the nature of that shame and how it does keep us from doing that. And one of my early reads on in the development of my practice and kind of working with people. One of the first books I came across was John Bradshaw's book, Healing the Shame That Binds You. Now, I will say it's a little heavy. It's a great resource, I think, for understanding shame, at least pre-Brene Brown. And there's a lot of good things in there, but he's definitely, you know, heavy in the sense of some of his examples and some of the situations that are there. But he talks about the notion of internalized shame and how that causes us to focus on a particular group of automatic thoughts to the exclusion of all contrary thoughts, and that preoccupation with those thoughts creates a kind of tunnel vision in which you think only of one kind of thought and notice only one aspect of your environment. And so that type of shame, it was interesting because I just kind of was doing some rereading in that book and I came across that quote, and then I had a session with a client. And I think it was like maybe just our first or second session. And he had been in recovery with his pornography addiction, you know, for a while. And he was kind of more coming to me to some maintenance. He felt like some things were kind of slipping in his life and he wanted to kind of get back on some track with things. And so he's just telling me some of the things that he did in his recovery. And it was just interesting the way that he used the word report. I've got to report to my wife. I've got to report to her. I got to, you know, should I report this or should I report that type of thing. And it just kind of hit me. I just like, you know, I hate that word. I hate the word report. And I just think that that comes with so much shame. And not only because it's not a great word. It makes you feel like, you know, again, you're a little kid and you got to report to your parent, or you've already done something bad and you maybe haven't even done something bad, but you've done something bad and now you got to share it. And so I kind of just stopped and I said, you know, I feel like that word report is just, you know, full of shame. And I think what if you thought about it from the standpoint of like, you get to share with your wife, you get to share about your day, about what's going on for you and about what's happening in your life and how that can shift that perspective. And he just kind of stopped and thought about it. And he was just like, yeah, he's like, that feels way better. And I'm like, yeah, I feel like it feels way better. It's not this, you know, it's not this demeaning kind of thing. It's not something where you feel like, but you actually get to share with her, which is something that I think we all want to do with our spouse. We want to share with them. And so to me, there's no intimacy or connection in reporting. There's only shame. And when we can share with our spouse about our day or about recovery, that's when we'll have connection and intimacy. So shame, like Bradshaw said, it starts in our thoughts and in our wording for things. And until we replace those shameful words, we will deny ourselves the opportunity for connection. So getting rid of shame and getting it out of our language and speaking shame and having those terms that reflect shame is another part of that process for us. I think that the other thing I wanted to kind of touch on this, I think it's the next slide, is just a truthful self-inventory and how important that is in terms of our understanding. A truthful self-inventory leads noticeably to better understanding of our own shortcomings. Understanding, according to Dr. Paul Conte, is the antidote for shame. We cannot have understanding without sharing ourselves and our story to others, and in particular, our spouse. And there's something I just want to say about that. It's like porn or our addiction, whatever that is, and shame wants to keep us alone, but freedom comes from being fully known. We have to be willing to share ourselves, and we have to be willing to do that in order to create understanding with those around us. We can't help somebody sometimes we don't understand their process or what's maybe happening for them, what's behind the addiction, all those things that can help us to have a better way of helping them through whatever their challenge is. And this is kind of going back to the Dopamine Nation book, but she says in there, truthfulness with ourselves and others allows us to leverage shame without shaming. I really want you to think about that. I'm going to mention a couple things about that, but truthfulness with ourselves and others allows us to leverage shame without shaming. And so like on the slide I said, there's two things that I think are so important in that statement. The first is, if you think about it, and you can raise your hand if you want, but who here would like to have more control or be able to manage their own shame more effectively? Who would want to do that? Okay, that's kind of what I thought. And so the idea of truthfulness and accountability really is what helps us to do that. It's almost like the notion of, I think, as we're truthful, it helps us to stay in front of our shame, because shame has no place, like, in the light. You know, we talk about that analogy of the light and the dark. It has no place in the light. And if we can stay ahead of it, then we keep ourselves out of these unnecessary battles with shame. I just think it's amazing sometimes how many unnecessary battles with shame we get into just because, you know, we let some thought in or we let some behavior in, and then it just becomes this tug of war between shame and ourselves and what we should do or what we shouldn't do. And if we can just keep in the light and keep in the truth, you know, it really does help us with that. So that's the first thing in that statement that I think is important, is our ability to leverage shame. We really can do that with that accountability and with a truthful way of operating. The second thing is, and this is something that's more difficult in terms of, you know, when you see it in a relationship and play out in a relationship, is that one of the worst things that we do with our shame in our relationship is that we shame our partner. And I'm sure that many of us have, you know, difficulties, or we've maybe even made amends or have had to, you know, feel some difficult sorrow when we come to that place of realization of the times that we've shamed our partner with our own shame because we didn't want to be open or honest about our behavior or about what we were doing, and that ended up on them. And so I think as we can do that, as we can stay away from, you know, obviously that behavior, and with the notion of being truthful in our relationships, not only do we get away from those behaviors, but then the more opportunities that we have for connection and intimacy is greater. And so when we become open and honest with each other, we create space for vulnerability, compassion, and understanding. And that space is where intimacy flourishes. Another book that I looked at a little bit, and it's something if you're interested in, the book is called The Soul of Shame. And it's a Christian book. It's got some good information in it. The one thing I always tell with my clients when I have them read that one, I'm not sure, like, I mean, his level of academia, I don't even know what it is, but he definitely, he doesn't necessarily try to bring it down to a more just kind of common level. I have a hard time reading it. There's some challenge, but there is some good information in there about shame. But one of the things he says is just vulnerability is the remedy to shame. Shame thrives in secrecy, silence, and judgment. And again, that's kind of like that dynamic of, like, you know, being in the dark versus being in the light. And, you know, our ability to be truthful and be open keeps us out of that. And so the last thing I just want to say about this is just that mutual honesty precludes shame and presages an intimacy explosion, a rush of emotional warmth that comes from feeling deeply connected to others when we're accepted despite our flaws. And so it's not perfection, but our own willingness to come together to remedy our mistakes that creates the intimacy that we crave. The rush we get from true intimacy is adaptive, it's rejuvenating, and it's health promoting. And that's what honesty gives us. And that's the benefits that we can have as we move towards that, those behaviors in our life. And so the last thing as far as this goes, and the notion of radical honesty, and this is the pattern that Anna Lemke talked about as far as what radical honesty looks like as it plays out in our relationships. And so first it can start with the notion of something that we do that leads to shame, something that, you know, we might, a mistake that we have, or maybe it's part of like a relapse or some kind of behavior that we do that leads to shame. Now that behavior demands radical honesty. We need to be willing to be open about it. And as we do that, the hope is that as we come out and we share what's going on for us, that it doesn't lead to any type of shunning, but it leads to a level of acceptance and empathy. That's the hope. Because that's going to, like I said earlier, that's going to benefit us in terms of providing that pathway, that chemical high, when we feel that sense of acceptance for being open. And so as we do that, as we share and we receive acceptance and empathy, there is also sometimes a set of required actions to make amends that's needed. And we all have experienced that at times, like that sometimes it's not just about being honest. Sometimes now we have to do something to make that better. And so that can be a part of the radical honesty process as well. And then finally, the hope is that through that, there'll be an increase of belonging and a decreased sense of consumption, because we'll feel more connected to those around us and we'll have less of a desire to consume whatever it is that we're doing that is more on the negative side. And so that's that process in a nutshell as far as the radical honesty and the benefits that can be achieved there. And I think it's such an important thing, you know, to be able to work towards that in our relationships, but also just individually. We can do that, you know, like I said before, in our own recovery process with the 12 steps, to work towards being more open and honest with ourselves. And so the last thing I just kind of want to share, just more of a couple, like a personal type of thing as far as this goes and the impact that it's been, you know, on my life. For those of you that were here with Jason's presentation, at the end, he showed a clip of his mom and she just talked about her journey through that process and the pain that she experienced. And it just kind of took me to a place where I saw my mom there and the pain that she went through with my dad, who was an addict. And at the time during that process, there wasn't the same resources or help, or I don't even know if we really knew what we were experiencing at the time, but it was an addiction and there was a lot of things that went on with that. If you want to listen to more about that, I have an episode on my podcast on that, growing up with an addict parent. But that was that experience. And one of the things that stands out and why this topic of honesty is such an important thing for me is because he never came out from behind that fortress. He built up a fortress of lies and never would come out from beyond that. He just never would risk the vulnerability to be accountable, to be open, and to just get the help that people wanted to give, but he just didn't do it. And so that led to a very challenging and difficult process for him. And he pretty much lost everything because he just could not get through that. And so I know that addiction touches us all in some way. And like I said, I think it's been great to be here and to just experience the love that people have for one another and for this process and for the energy that is spent towards healing, because it's something that we all need in some way.
All right. Well, there you have it. There's my presentation from the Hope and Healing Workshop. It was just such a great event. I got to connect with so many great people during and afterwards. Clay Olson, who is the CEO of Fight the New Drug, was there. So I got to connect with him. He's a great guy and doing some great work, not only with pornography addiction, but now with mental health. Jason Coombs, who is the author of the book Unhooked, which I highly recommend. And has a he's the owner of a recovery house here in the Boise area, as well as September Frogley, who is a part of Connection is the Cure, working on suicide and talking more about suicide and the impact of mental health in general. So just a lot of great people at this workshop. I was so grateful to be a part of it and to have an opportunity to speak and to share some things with people. Just a great thing. So anyway, look forward to continuing on with the podcast this year. And hopefully we'll have some of those people on the show to talk about their experiences and some of the things that they're doing. And I think you'll enjoy them as much as I did. So this is the Vegas Therapist signing out. Until next time.